Hey, good afternoon, Army of Angels. This is Tom McNew coming to you in the Hometown Heroes live on the road here. We have the very distinct pleasure this afternoon of sitting down with the one and only Abby Johnson, who is the founder of And Then There Were None, which we're going to talk a lot about here in just a few minutes. I think you might actually be the most famous person we've ever had in a Hometown Hero. So you're a true hero. But anyway, I'll let you introduce yourself to the 2.2 million people that are in our listening area now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on. I'm so happy to be on here and to have this conversation. Yeah, I've had a movie made about me, about my story, really. I mean, about God's story and what he's done in my life. It's called Unplanned. That was adapted from my book called Unplanned. I've written a couple other books, and it's really about my journey into Planned Parenthood, our country's largest abortion provider, the world's largest abortion provider, and then my journey out, my conversion story, you know, just getting into the abortion industry as a young, naive, ignorant kid, going to Texas A&M, not really knowing much about the abortion debate at all. And, you know, I wasn't raised that way. I was raised in a conservative Christian home, raised knowing that, you know, we were pro-life. I mean, I heard that word, you know, that we're pro-life, that we're against abortion. But I think it was a different time then. You know, I'm 44. I was born in 1980. I know, right?
I'm sorry. I feel old.
I'm like a baby. I know. I'm a baby.
I'm kidding.
But I think I grew up in South Louisiana, and there was no abortion clinic around where I lived. You know, we didn't drive by a Planned Parenthood. I didn't know anything about abortion. And we certainly didn't sit around the dinner table and talk pro-life politics or, you know, we didn't talk about abortion. I think my parents thought, you know, we have taught Abby the biblical pathway to marriage, and that's abstinence until marriage. And so, you know, as long as she follows that path, then we don't need to talk about it. Right? We don't need to talk about these really difficult things with our little girl. I'm an only child. And I think in a way my parents thought the church is going to handle this.
Yeah.
And then the church thought the parents are going to handle this. And so nobody was handling it.
You're just speaking of about three generations of American people of all faith backgrounds.
Yes.
When you in that context of the church thinks the parents are going to handle it and the parents think the church is going to handle it.
And so nobody's talking about it.
Now what faith background did you grow up in?
So I grew up very very Southern Baptist.
Okay. That was my assumption, but I didn't want to go there for sure.
Very so. Southern Baptist, and in a wonderful church, a wonderful community of people, and didn't come into the Catholic Church until 2012, and so, you know, I think going to A&M, kind of being in this, you know, growing up in kind of this sheltered world, which is beautiful. I mean, it's really how you want your kids to grow up, right? Not being exposed to worldly, fleshly sin, these things. It was beautiful, but also you go to our country's largest university and you're going to be exposed to those things pretty quickly. And, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, I kind of fell out of my faith. And, you know, that's not really how it works. It's like when people say, you know, you fall pregnant. That's not how that works either.
Those are deliberate decisions.
Right. You kind of have to actively take a role in that. And I did. I mean, I actively stepped away from God. I actively stepped away from my faith because sin was fun. Sin was a lot of fun. I mean, if sin wasn't fun, we wouldn't want to do it.
That's exactly right.
Right. And I found myself just living a life that was really contrary to how I was brought up. And And that's how I found myself talking to a Planned Parenthood representative. And then all of a sudden, I'm working at Planned Parenthood. And I'm, you know, in those counseling rooms telling women an abortion is the right thing for you, mm-hmm. and really believing it. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, I'm really enmeshed in this evil lifestyle and not seeing the truth that is directly in front of my face.
I think a lot of our listeners have read your book and have seen the movie. And for those of you that haven't, I highly recommend it. The book is excellent.
The book is better than the movie.
The book is always better than the movie. Yes. But anyway, why write the story in the first place?
Yeah.
What was the impetus behind writing the story?
Yeah. So a couple things, you know, first I had a lot of things in me that I wanted to say. And I was very, I would say broken after I left, you know, I had just a lot of heartbreak, mm-hmm. a lot of things. I just thought I've got to share this, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was very healing. It was a very healing exercise for me to kind of get all of this out because I felt ashamed.
Sure.
And I thought, you know, getting your shame out into the light, it really sanitizes it. Mm. And it doesn't feel like shame anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it purifies it.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. And so I wanted to do that. But the primary reason I wanted to do it was because I thought there has to be other people like me that are out there in the industry working in these clinics who are thinking, is this really what I want to do? Is this really who I am? I mean, nobody grows up wanting to work in an abortion clinic, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you grow up wanting to help people. I always wanted to be a doctor or a nurse.
Okay.
That's always what I wanted to do. But I didn't want to help kill babies, you know?
And no woman wakes up in the morning thinking, I'm having an abortion, and that's the most wonderful thing that I've ever had.
Exactly. Same thing. Yeah. I mean, there's a series of decisions that lead you into the doors of an abortion clinic. And that's how it had been for me. And so I thought, there have to be other people that want to leave this industry but find themselves unable to do so. And I wanted to find those women. And I thought, if I do this, and there's just one person that picks up this book, you know, because if I was working in a business, in an industry, and some jerk comes out and writes this tell-all book about the industry I'm working in, I'm going to pick it up and read it, right? Even if I'm picking it up and reading it as a critic, I'm going to read it just to say, this person is such an idiot, right?
Like, that's not the way it is.
That's not the way it is. And what happened was exactly that. We put the book out January 11th, 2011. And in the first 3 months of the book coming out, I had received 17 emails from women who had picked the book up and had said, I read this, I read it as a critic, and there was so much truth, and I want to leave. Can you help me?
Wow.
And I thought, okay, like, this is great. And what I did was I started praying. Mm-hmm. And I started praying and said, okay, God,
what do you want me to do with this?
No. What I said was, okay, God, clearly there's a need here. And so will you please put it on the heart of someone to start an organization to help clinic workers leave the abortion industry? Just put it on somebody's heart.
Anybody.
Just please put it on their heart to start an organization. And I literally prayed that for like 6 to 8 months.
Danger words.
I just kept every day. Like, God, I just keep getting the emails. God, just somebody needs to step up and do it, God. And finally, it was like a realization. Like, he smacked me on the head with like a 2x4. Like, dummy.
It's you.
It's you, you big moron, you know.
I've been shaping you this whole time for this moment.
And I was like, What? I don't want to do that. I don't know how to do that. Like, I know how to run a nonprofit. I don't know how to start one up. I don't have the skills for that. I don't have the knowledge.
You Moses'd him.
You're
like, I don't know how to talk.
I don't know.
And he's like, don't even worry
And
about
he
it.
Was like, I got you, girl.
Yeah.
And we got it started. And in that first year, we got it started. We officially...
And then there were none.
We officially got it launched June 2012. And I have to tell you...
So it took almost 18 months from the time the book came out before you...
It did, before we got like our official nonprofit and everything like that.
And some of that is paperwork and et cetera, et cetera.
A lot of it was paperwork.
And like you said, some of that was your own discernment and the good Lord laughing at you. But as you're standing up that and you're working through that process, was there ever a point you were like, I don't know if this is really where I need to be? Or were were there always those signposts, I guess, along the way that said that told you were marching in the right direction?
I mean, I always knew I was marching in the right direction as far as being pro-life, you know, always. And I was becoming more and more pro-life, right? I was like becoming more and more staunchly pro-life.
And dare I say, were you becoming more and more profoundly, truly Catholic?
Yes. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And that, it all kind of came to a head, I guess, because we came into the church Easter of 2012.
Mm. When was baby Fulton born?
Fulton was born in 2019.
Okay.
So we were right. It was all kind of happening at one time, right?
Wow.
Because we came into the church Easter of 2012. I was pregnant with my son Alex after 2 years of dealing with subfertility.
Mm.
We did not know if we were going to be able to have another child because of birth control.
Yep.
Birth control had so just wreaked havoc on my body. I did not know it was happening.
On everybody's body.
Right? Mm-hmm. I did not know if we were going to be able to have children. We had this miracle pregnancy. I was pregnant with Alex when we came into the church. And that was funny because we had to convalidate our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So as we're standing up there saying our vows again, Father Michael O'Connor says, and are you open to life? And
little
I'm
bit,
like, big pregnant,
bit.
Right? And I'm like, yeah, we're good.
Yeah,
we're good on that,
so.
Right? So I'm pregnant with this like child that we didn't know if we were ever going to be able to conceive. We come into the church June, a couple months later, and then there were none launches.
Mm.
I had all these people, you're not going to believe this, but I had all these people in the pro-life movement. This is the only time that I thought, am I doing the right thing?
Okay.
Because I went to all these leaders in the pro-life movement. These were friends, right? People I consider friends. And I went to them and I said, I've got this idea and I think it's great. And I went to them saying, telling them about it, and then there were none. And every single one of them, except one, looked at me and said, that's really cute.
Wow.
But that's not going to work.
Wow.
They're never going to come to you. They're never going to leave. And they're looking at me saying this. Someone who did
do it.
Leave the abortion industry. But they were like, no, that's never going to work. They're never going to trust you. They're never going to leave. And literally so many of them looked at me and said, Abby, some people are just too far gone.
Wow. Mm. Like, redemption is not for everybody. It's only for a few.
And I just thought...
Mm. That's sad.
Wow. Like, we must not be worshiping the same God.
Yeah.
Because I read through scripture, and I see conversion after conversion.
To the worst.
It seems like God really loves a converted heart, to me. Like, that's what I see
Let's
in scripture.
Start naming him off. Yeah.
And I was like, gosh, I mean, like, haven't you heard of St. Paul?
Yeah.
I mean, haven't you heard of King David? Like, seriously?
Right.
Like, you're going to start telling me that
Let's just go
some
back to
people
Adam
are
and
too
Eve.
Far? Yeah. Right?
Let's go to the beginning.
And so there was times though when I kept hearing that over and over again. I was like, God, is this what you want me to do? Like, are people really not going to come?
Is sin bigger than you, God?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, my husband was such an encourager, and he was like, no, Abby, like,
this is
what you're supposed to do. That first year we had 53 workers come to us and not just come to us, but say, I am going to give my life to the Lord. And that's success for us. Mm-hmm. It's not just leaving. It's not just leaving and saying, I don't want to work here anymore. See you later. Success for us is leaving the industry and coming into a relationship with Christ.
Absolutely.
That's success for us. It's not just leaving the job, but it's not just a transaction, right? Mm-hmm. Like you leave, we give you money, we never see you again. It's not transactional for us. It's transformational for us.
I love that.
So we had 53 lives transformed. And that was, I really felt like it was kind of like, I don't know. Like, well, look at what we did, right? To everybody that said, like, that's not going to happen. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
Flag.
I was like, well, look at this victory we've had, everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, ha ha, right? And then the next year, we had over 100 leave. And it just kept, the ball just kept rolling. And it was so beautiful. And now here we are over 10 years later, and we've had over 715 workers come into a relationship with Christ. And most of them, I have to say, did grow up with some sort of faith foundation. And if they grew up with a faith foundation, they were baptized Catholic.
The seed is there.
They were baptized Catholic.
Wow.
And so our primary responsibility to those who have been baptized Catholic is to get them back into the sacraments.
Absolutely.
And so we want to get them to confession. Yep. We want to get them to reconciliation because we want to get them to the Eucharist. Yep. And we even have in our ministry, one of our licensed therapists is a Protestant. She's a pastor's wife, actually. Mm. She's a Protestant pastor's wife. And she's a licensed therapist. And so on one of our healing retreats, one of the women who was with us, she was a former worker, but she had actually had to go to inpatient psychiatric treatment after leaving the industry because it is 95% of the workers who come to us have diagnosable PTSD.
Yeah, I'm
sure.
So we've had several that have had to go to inpatient psychiatric facilities. And this woman had come out of the facility. She came to our healing retreat. Baptized Catholic, had been very involved in her faith for many years, then went to work in the abortion industry, came to our retreat, and she said to me, Abby, I've got to get to confession. I know I have to get to confession. I haven't had the Eucharist in over a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she said, I'm just longing for it. I need it. So I called my priest. I said, listen, can you make time today? It was a Saturday. And he's like, of course, right? Of course. Let's do it. So I get her to our parish at that time. Now, This Baptist minister's wife goes there as well with me. And this woman walks in, goes to reconciliation, receives that sacrament, comes out. And this friend of mine, this pastor's wife, says to me, Abby, she looks different.
Mm. Well, yeah, she's a fresh saint, like right off the press.
She said, I've never seen anything like it.
Wow.
She said, her color is different. Her posture is different. The way she walks is different.
She's no longer bearing that weight.
Yes. Thank you, and Jesus. I said, well, yeah. I mean, literally, her skin when she walked in was like gray. It was like ashen. There was no color in her face.
The visible signs of sin, yeah.
Yes. She was like hunched over because that burden.
Oh, yeah.
Was so heavy on her.
The pain.
And when she turned around and came out of the chapel doors, it was like we were looking at a different person.
Wow.
The color in her skin was back. Her skin was pink and healthy. And she was standing up straight. And that had such a that was such a powerful moment for this pastor's wife.
Yeah, to witness it.
To
for
witness
herself.
That. And she still talks about it today.
Wow.
What a powerful
She's
moment.
She's on the road.
She's on the road.
Yes.
She's going to come home, right?
Yes. She's going to come
and
home.
Damascus is ahead.
Yes.
That's right.
And for any listeners that are like, hey, I haven't been to confession in a while, at least this is a great starting point. You know,
yes.
head to the confession. You will not need any facial masks or cucumber slices
nope.
or avocado masks.
No.
Just head to confession.
And it will not cost you an arm and a
no,
leg.
No Botox That's right. necessary. This is like Catholic Botox. You That's just go to right. confession. Catholic you lift. That, well, with today's reading is about you know, presenting your wife in a blemish-free
exactly right.
yes. without a wrinkle. Go That's to confession.
Right. You don't need a gut detox.
No, ma'am.
You just need confession.
Yep. Absolutely.
So clean. Talk a little bit more about, and then there were none. Well, so I guess let me ask this question a different way. Why the name?
Yeah.
And then kind of for those of us, the uninitiated, mm-hmm. explain what you do, what the organization does.
That's a good mm-hmm. question.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why we just kind of settled on that name. I was the vision, I guess I kind of started with the vision first. So the vision was, if there are no more abortion clinics, then there will be no more, if there are no more abortion clinic workers, there will be no more abortion clinics. If there are no more abortion clinics, there will be no more abortions. Mm. And so our goal was to start with the workers. We've been doing this the other way mm-hmm. for 50 years.
Getting the client.
Yes. Right? Going to the clients first and then, you know, kind of dealing with the demand, mm-hmm. right? We're going to limit the demand and then that will close the clinics and then that will decrease the abortion clinic workers. We were like, what if we do it the other way? Mm-hmm. You know, what if we keep fighting that way?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But what if we go from the supply first and we kind of go top down, mm. right? And so we started looking at it that way and we were like, what if we just pick them off one at a time? What if we just pick them off? And what if we just bring people to the cross one at a time until there are none, until there are no more? And we're going to take one worker at a time, and that's going to close one clinic at a time mm-hmm. until there are no more. And so that's kind of how we came up with yeah. the name.
I love that. That's beautiful.
And we have seen it do serious destruction yeah. to the abortion industry. We have our workers have shut down 48 abortion clinics.
Thank you, Jesus.
Amen.
Which has just been just a hallelujah sort of praise mm-hmm. for us. We envisioned that would happen when we started it. We're like, okay, Jesus, we hope we get to yeah. shut down clinics, right? And then when it started happening, we were so overjoyed
wow.
At just these miracles we were seeing. And over 715 workers, 48 abortion clinics closed. And I think the life change we see, it's really incredible. You know, the women that and men that work in these clinics, but it's primarily women, we do a lot of statistics. We take a lot of, you know, statistics.
Metrics.
A lot of metrics. We look at that. 38% of the women who come through our ministry have suicidal ideation.
Yikes. Mm.
18% of them, they attempt suicide. Mm. We have had, unfortunately, one successful suicide.
Oh, boy. I didn't think about that part of it. You know, you think about the woman undergoing the suffering of abortion and the weight she carries for the rest of her life, but you don't think about the weight of those workers.
Yeah.
Once they open their eyes, you know, we just had Bartimaeus asking, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Jesus, let me see the way you do. And what do you want from me is to see. Once you see,
it's such a burden. It is such a burden. And that is a burden for me to try to bring them to Christ, to try to bring them to a place where they understand that they are truly forgiven, mm-hmm. that they do not have to bear the weight mm-hmm. of this sin, that they can bring it to the foot of the cross
and release it
mm-hmm. that they don't have to live in that bondage. And so when I have to tell you, I was the woman that committed suicide. She was actually brought to the hospital before she died, before mm-hmm. she passed away. And I was with her when she died. And there was such a suffering in her life. before she died. And I was there when she died. And it was, I read her last journal entry before she actually died. And there was just in the journal entry, it was just a sorrowful, like, it just said something like, I'll never be able to forget what I've done. Mm-hmm. And to me, I just thought, it propelled me even more to reach out to these women before they get to that place.
Yeah.
That is the command. That is what Jesus has compelled me to do. Of course, I want to save babies from abortion. Of course, right? We all want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Of course.
Sure.
That's the fun thing to do, right? That's the fun thing to do, to see little babies saved and to see their little chubby rolls on their arms and legs. Right. That's the fun part of being pro-life.
Holding those babies.
Yes, that's the fun. That's the cute part of being pro-life. But gosh, I'm out here trying to save middle-aged women from going to hell.
Yeah.
Right? That's what God has compelled me to do. And I hope that as pro-lifers, that we see beyond the cute chubby babies, mm-hmm. right? That we see that there are people literally on a road to hell, mm-hmm. that they are on a road to eternal damnation.
Mm-hmm. And because no one told them there is redemption.
Yeah.
No one told them
you
can be forgiven. No one told them there is a way out and it's not your way, it's God's way.
Yeah. And that maybe nobody has even presented Christ to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I feel like that is our responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is really what it is to be pro-life.
Mm-hmm. And what's that done to your faith journey? To the faith, your personal faith, but also inside your family.
Well, I have to tell you, the greatest joy in our family, the greatest blessing in our family has, number one, been joining the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I can tell you assuredly that we would not be in the place we are right now if we had not become Catholic. Hmm. We would not have the family we have. I would not have 8 children. My husband and I would not have the marriage that we have right now if it had not been for the Catholic Church. But secondly, we have consecrated our family to the Blessed Hearts of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Family, yes.
And that is something that I think is very important that families don't know about. Our family has been changed through Catholic Family Land.
Yeah.
And a lot of families have not heard of it. A lot of families have heard of it, but they think it's something weird.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Ferris wheels and stuff like that, because it sounds like a weird Catholic.
Sounds like Six Flags or something.
Yeah, like a weird Catholic Six Flags.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's an apostolate for families. And I am really trying hard. I've been working with them to bring a retreat to this area because it's up in Ohio. And we made the trek. We're committed to going every year, making the trek up to Ohio. It's worth it. It's worth the 19-hour drive to go because it does transform families.
And for the listeners, your oldest is how old?
She's a senior.
And your youngest is how young?
5.
So that's the span that you're working with.
Yes.
You know, to try to shepherd all of those souls.
Yes.
To heaven.
Yes.
Because the same job that you have with the women that are perfect strangers that you're working with to keep them from out of hell, you got to do the same thing
Absolutely.
With these precious souls.
Yes. Even more importantly, with my own family.
Yes, because you'll have to answer them.
Yeah. And we are doing our best. I mean, that is our job as parents, to get our children to heaven. And we're doing it through this consecration.
Mm-hmm.
We are, you know, we're committed to praying the rosary every day with our family, as a family. It's not always easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, our kids are in sports. Our kids are running around, you know, acting like maniacs during the rosary. But you know what? We're doing it anyway. Sometimes we turn on YouTube and we literally type in fast rosary, you know, and we, there's a 13-minute rosary
speed
YouTube,
rosary, yes.
And we do the speed rosary, right? But we do it.
Yeah.
We, that is such an important part. And people are like, what's the big deal? It is a big deal.
It's the foundation.
It is a foundation for a Catholic family. And, you know, saying prayers, praying the rosary, eating together.
Giving your child
every
a blessing
night,
on their way out before they go
always
to school.
Always blessing our children every night. We have blessed oil from St. Padre Pio Shrine. Oh, we bless them every night with that oil, saying prayers with them, you know, praying specific intentions for their friends, for our family.
Telling all the saints' stories as though
yes.
they're people you know, not like
yes.
strangers that happened 1,000 years ago.
Absolutely.
It truly is.
It yeah. does change your family. And so I encourage, we're not perfect. We are far
what?
From the perfect Catholic family. Oh, my gosh. People are like, oh, Abby, you just look like you're doing everything right. Oh, my yeah. gosh. We are absolutely not.
You haven't
not.
Seen the laundry basket.
Oh, my gosh. We are far from perfect.
Who is emptying out the dishwasher today? Woo. I don't know.
We are yeah. far from perfect. But
you're going to get 8 different answers to that, that question.
Oh, man. We screw up every day. I mean, the other day, I was in the car with my daughter and my 17-year-old, and I don't know. I just, a song came on and just really started thinking about, you know, myself as a mom and just all the ways I've screwed up, mm-hmm. you know, as a mom, particularly with her, because she's the guinea pig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a deep dive.
We've made all the mistakes with yeah. her, right? And I just kind of started thinking about it. I just kind of started tearing up with her in the car, and I just grabbed her hand and I just said, you know, Grace, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
For all the ways that I've messed up.
Yeah.
You know, as a mom. And she's kind of looked at me and she said, Mom, she said, you've worked so hard. And she said, you've done such a good job and I love you so much.
Aww.
And that's all we can do.
But that humility and that openness teaches her way more
yeah.
than what we can, than any kind of book or psychologist or,
absolutely.
You know, can ever try to impart absolutely. Upon our children.
And, you know, knowing Abby, the little bit that I've known her, this is not, I'm not trying to, you know, throw flowers on you or anything, but the reality is, if you're going to work in the abortion industry to save those souls, then people have to understand, whether they watch your movie, read your books, follow you on whatever media they were going to follow you on, the reality is that there's a humility in knowing that you are a screw up and that you're trying to find
yeah.
redemption.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because nobody needs a leader that's coming in and saying, I've done it all right, and I haven't yeah. made a single mistake, and I'm ready to lead you into glory, because that's not true, right? The only one that did that is Christ himself.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so you point everybody to Jesus by saying, listen, this is the place I screwed up. We were just talking about Paul, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you look at St. Paul, you look at any of the saints that have fallen deeply and said, I screwed up badly, and this is the way. And it's not my way, it's Christ's way.
That's right.
And that's how your kids learn. You know, I had a very similar conversation with my oldest daughter very recently. She's 30, going to be 33, and she's the mother of my one and only grandchild. That's how you learn, that every time you've screwed up, it gives seed to that beautiful grandchild. So have courage. No matter how badly you messed up, the grandchildren that are coming soon, you're going to be like, oh, you know what? It wasn't all for nothing. All that time I sweated it out, it's all right here in glory.
Yeah.
You just have to wait a little bit.
Yeah,
that's right.
Awesome. That is too funny.
Yeah.
So, to go back to the organization, what is it? The phone rings. I'm creating a probably not a real scenario here, but the phone rings and it's Mary Jo Smith, and she says, I need help.
Yeah.
What goes after that?
Yeah. What's next, Ranger, as we like to say in the Army?
Yeah. So we have an intake manager, an intake counselor, who talks to every single woman that calls, texts, emails through our hotline. And we just walk with her on the journey. So we don't ever want finances to be a reason that someone stays mm-hmm. in the industry of death. So if she says, I want to leave, but I'm a single mom,
and
which most of them are,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, if someone leaves and says, I want to leave, but my rent
mm-hmm.
is due,
mm-hmm.
I don't have a car, I don't, whatever it is, we're like, girl, just leave. Yeah. We've got you. You know,
wow.
Once you recognize evil, the Bible says you are to flee from it. Do not cooperate with it. Do not look back. Flee. And that's why we rely on our donors, because we've got to get them out of there immediately. Mm-hmm. We don't want them to stay one more second. Mm-hmm. And so we encourage them, drop your keys at the door and run.
No 6-week resignation letter.
Nope.
No long transition time.
Nope.
Training the next one.
Nope. Do not give a notice. You just drop your keys and run.
Literally do not pass go. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah. Do not worry about that letter of recommendation. No. And a lot of times they lose paid time off. Mm-hmm. They lose sick leave. If you don't give a letter of recommendation, they'll lose a bunch of money. Don't care. We've got you. Just run. Leave. And so we help them financially transition out of there. We have professional resume writers on staff. We have professional headhunters on staff that help them find another job.
Because these are skilled women. They're not schmoes passing out pills and saying good luck with that, although that's what it seems like sometimes, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
But they're professional women that have been doing these jobs very well.
Yes.
For the most part. Very, very well.
Yes.
So they can be very well reshaped.
Yes. And if they do not have medical credentials, let's say they are not a medical assistant or whatever, but they want to be. We actually have an endowment fund that was gifted to us by a really amazing lady who passed away. And what she wanted in her passing was to set up an endowment fund for women who wanted to continue medical education. Mm. And so we have an endowment fund that allows us to provide scholarships to any former worker who comes through our ministry so that they can continue on with any sort of medical education. So if they want to get an associate's degree, if they want to get a certificate, if they want to go on and get their master's degree, if they want to go on and be a doctor, we could actually pay for that through this endowment fund.
That's fantastic.
And so we have been able to do that. We've been able to pay for some of these women to go on and get nursing degrees.
That's awesome. We've been
able to pay for nurse practitioners to become certified natural family planning medical practitioners.
It's been beautiful.
We've been able to do all kinds of things. We had a former abortion doctor come through our program, and she wanted to be a certified natural family planning practitioner, medical practitioner.
I love that.
And so she's completely changed her world. Yeah. She used to kill babies, and now she's helping bring babies into the world
and
through NAPRO technology.
Yes, teach couples how to.
So it's just been beautiful. So we help them in any way that they need to. We have helped some workers who were working at Planned Parenthood as illegal immigrants. We've helped them gain their citizenship into this country. We have a team of attorneys who work for us pro bono in all 50 states.
Wow.
So if there's something illegal going on in the clinic that they need to report, we're able to get them hooked up with an attorney at no cost.
So that they don't fall in, they don't fall prey.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So they can be whistleblowers. Mm-hmm. That's how we've been able to shut down the 48 abortion clinics. So it's an incredible, very comprehensive program that we're able to provide to the clinic workers that come to us.
And is the biggest hurdle financial or psychological?
For us as a ministry, it's financial because it's not cheap.
The ladies or the people, the employees.
You're talking about the workers.
Yeah, who are trying to leave.
So initially, it's usually financial.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured.
But then once they leave, it's all of this trauma sets in, right? All of this trauma begins to manifest because, you know, it's kind of like when you look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
At the very, bottom, at that base level, it's just food, shelter, basic things. So once we get that taken care of, then all of the emotional needs kind of start just barreling down
crumble.
On them, right?
Everything
yeah,
crumble.
It just starts really putting pressure on them. So once we can get kind of their basic housing needs, food, shelter, those things, then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I feel depressed. Oh my gosh, I'm having panic attacks. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Every time I go outside, I look up in the clouds and I see body parts of babies.
Mm-hmm.
They start feeling like they start having this psychosis.
Yeah.
They start, having this anxiety, general anxiety.
I mean, that's literally satanic. I mean,
it is. Absolutely.
There's no other description for it except for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So many of our listeners have a either direct or indirect relationship with the military, and so
yes,
that PTSD that I've, you know,
the trauma
that, yeah, and the mental gymnastics that your brain goes through and has to go through, mm-hmm. to heal that is, I mean, I'm not equating the two, let me just be perfectly clear, but there is some synonymous or similarities rather in going through that PTSD like you talked about.
Absolutely. And it's similar, like there's been a lot of studies done on moral injury. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with veterans, they feel like there's a lot of moral injury there because they were doing something valiant and good for the country, but they had to do things that maybe went against their conscience.
Their own personal conscience.
Their own personal, mm-hmm. but they did it for
the bigger good.
For the greater good.
And,
right.
And as someone who suffers from that PTSD, I can tell you that is, and I'm sure that there's some, again, some similarities, you know, that.
Oh, but absolutely. That's valid.
And so the workers.
Teaching yourself that is hard.
So the workers, when they leave, they feel that same sense, yeah. because they got into it thinking they were doing a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And they were protected by helping. The culture, telling yes. them and reassuring them that they're mm-hmm. doing the right thing.
Yes.
So when you leave that little bubble of you're doing the right thing for the bigger picture, and all of a sudden you see, as Bartimaeus said, you see the truth, there's no protection except for through the blessed yeah. sacrament.
Yes. And so then we have to break through that, mm-hmm. whereas this is where it's different with veterans. Veterans were actually doing a good thing. The abortion workers were not.
No. Yeah.
And so then it's like an even greater mm-hmm. burden, mm. right? Because then they're like, oh, crap. I actually yeah. wasn't doing a good yeah. thing. This was actually detrimental
that.
To society, yeah. to these women. You know, to God, to country, all these things. This was actually awful, what I was doing. I was participating in murder,
yeah. Yeah.
right? And so it wasn't killing, it was murder,
mm-hmm.
right? And there's mm-hmm. a vast difference
yeah. yep.
between the
yeah.
two.
Justified war versus
and it's like
murder.
Their whole world just starts crumbling down. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start getting into the suicidal ideation,
sure.
yeah, suicidal
sure.
attempts, things like that.
Yeah. yeah. It's way too much pressure for any yeah. one soul to take. It's yeah. a miracle that you guys are able to do what you guys can do and respond as you do, you
yeah.
know, leading them back to Christ.
Yeah.
So you earlier spoke about the biggest burden on the actual organization, and then there were none, and that's the financial burden.
Yeah.
What would be the average cost per worker from the moment you take that first phone call to the moment you lead them back to the Eucharist? What is the average cost? If there's a donor out there thinking, well, I'd like to at least sponsor one of those workers.
I would say from start to finish, including all of the healing components, healing retreats, mm-hmm. costs for all mm-hmm. that, it's about
$7,500. Mm-hmm. $7,500. So if somebody wanted to write a check for one worker and sponsor one worker out of there, it's $7,500.
Yeah. And people are like, gosh, that's a lot of money, you know. But it's a soul.
Yeah.
It's an eternal soul.
Yeah. yeah.
And I mean, for me, I mean, I think, was my life worth $7,500?
Yeah.
I
yeah.
mean,
were the lives of your other seven children
was
worth
the lives of my children? You know, yeah. I mean, it's a generational impact.
Right. Well, when you flip it the way you did it before, when you look at the abortion client going in and trying to attain an abortion and ending up at a crisis pregnancy center, the cost from the moment she calls to the moment she has her baby, and then the 3 years we put in,
yes,
you're looking at about the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an equal for equal life, except you're helping one person out of hell. You're helping another person out of hell. Same thing.
Well, and I think yeah. too, like, look at the trajectory mm-hmm. that you are helping to create,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, helping to save me from the abortion industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like, look at me, I'm so great.
Yeah.
But I've gone on now to have seven children.
Mm-hmm.
That would not have happened mm-hmm. if I was still working in the abortion industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those seven children are going to go on to have other children.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
by the grace of
it's
God.
A generational impact, right?
Absolutely. It's a domino effect.
It changes the trajectory. Getting one person out of the abortion industry changes the trajectory of someone's life.
Absolutely.
And so to me, I'm like, gosh, that's worth it. Mm-hmm. That's completely worth it. I mean, changing someone's path from hell to eternal life, that's worth it enough for me. But I mean, when you think about the generational impact, it's incredible.
I mean, you know, you talk about heritage leaving, you know, when you support an organization as a heritage, as a legacy giving, this is something that you can easily do, is set aside $7,500 for your legacy and name this organization as the beneficiary, just like you would any other organization. And over the course of a lifetime, it's literally pennies. Pennies to save a soul.
So how if somebody's listening and they're getting ready, they're writing that check for $7,500 right now, where do they send it? How do they get in touch with you and your organization?
Easy. They just go to abortionworker.com. And you can see videos, stories of women who have come through our ministry, you know, the impact that it's had on these former workers who have left, many different stories, all the different projects we're working on currently. We had a short film come out, a short documentary film called She Was Stronger. Mm-hmm. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's a beautiful documentary, but it shows very clearly the three lives that were changed because they left the abortion industry through our ministry. It's beautiful. It has almost 500,000 views on YouTube, which is incredible.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's completely free to watch. I would encourage people to go watch She Was Stronger on YouTube. It really highlights what we're doing and the why behind what we're doing. I think it's linked on our website as well, but it's abortionworker.com.
Yeah. And if you search "and then there were none," you may get references to books and miniseries and things like that. But abortionworker.com is where you want to go. It's a interesting dynamic of the interwebs, but I digress. Anyway, so I'm gonna kind of close it a little lightheartedly here. It's a question I like to ask a lot of our guests. To tell us something about yourself that maybe only your husband, maybe your kids, your parents know about you. It doesn't need to be scandalous. You know, you paint a letter out of the jar of your finger or something like that. You know?
Okay, this is weird. This is a weird thing.
Yes,
okay,
the weirder the better.
Listen,
very weird.
Hold
the
on,
better.
Before I just need to preface this comment with, I went to school at University of Texas, so I'm just going to say the fact
weird
that you
galore.
Went to school at
weird
A&M.
Galore.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I have something called cetophobia. It is a fear of whales.
Is it the blubber? Is it the blowholes?
No.
Is
it's it just, I don't know.
That's a real thing?
It's a real thing. I am terrified of whales.
Like to see them in pictures?
I don't even want to see them in pictures.
No.
I can't even think about them. Like, it's so weird. They're so big. The fact
that
they can swallow someone and you can live inside
too
of them
many.
And they can.
Pinocchio. It was Pinocchio did it too.
And they can, like, blow you out of their mouth and you can survive that is terrifying to
Jonah.
Me.
Jonah. It is Jonah.
I can't even look at one. I can't even look at a picture. So, funny story,
that is
though.
Fascinating.
My husband thinks it's hilarious.
I'm sure he does.
Okay. So, if he can find like a little tiny whale somewhere, like they'll hide it. They will hide these little tiny
Isn't
whales
like a
in the
whole
house.
Fashion line like
Vineyard Vines.
Yes,
Vineyard
it's
Vines,
like the whale.
Yeah.
No.
Who's
no,
not a sponsor
deny.
Yet.
No.
So they'll find these little tiny like whales and they'll put them in places like in the medicine cabinet when I open it.
Gosh.
And I'm like, ah!
Merry Christmas, Mom.
I hate whales. Like
that
and
is
my
so
friends,
bizarre,
that is too
Abby.
Funny.
They think like they're like,
when
oh, you're just
start?
Being dramatic.
Let's lazy boy analyze Abby.
I don't know when it started, but I'm telling you, like, if I it, my friends think it's like, oh, you're just being dramatic, and so they'll send me a video of like a little canoe and like a whale that's like 16 times the size of the canoe, and they're like, ha, this is for you, and I'm telling you, it makes me gag. Like, if I see like a whale.
I'm sorry, I really should not
we're
be laughing.
We're laughing at her suffering. This is terrible. We're going to have to go to confession.
I'm sorry.
It gives me like chill bumps. I want to cry. I can't even think about it. Like right now in my mind, I'm like, I have to like have to CBT that out of my brain. I cannot even think about it. It is one time I went to Australia and with Doug and Grace, and we get on this boat, and they're like, yeah, we're going to take you on a tour. It was like down in
Was it a whale watching
It was down
tour?
In Tasmania. They're like, we're going to take you on a tour. You see, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, by the way, we may see a whale. And I'm telling like, you right now, no, I almost jumped off that boat.
Get me out.
I was like, if we see a whale,
I'm out.
I'm probably going to die of
but
a heart attack.
Do you know that would be more dangerous to jump into the water?
Yeah, no,
whale.
I was like, I can't jump into the water because then I might jump right into the mouth of the whale.
The Peter moment, Jesus, I'm walking on water right now.
I was like, I may have to get off the boat right now. And Doug was like, settle down.
It's okay.
We're probably not going to see a whale. And I was like, nobody point out a whale. No. If you see it, do not point it out. Like, just pretend.
So no trips into the Puget Sound in your future, anything like that?
Nope.
Alaska.
No. In fact, I went to Alaska and my friend was with me and she was like looking for whales. She was actively looking for whales like as we're driving. And I was like, Nicola, if you point out a whale, I might crash this car. Like, I will get so nervous. Please do not. Like, if you see one, please do not point it out.
I know that there's beautiful Eskimo pro-lifers out there that are like, but Abby,
no.
They're our life source.
Mm-mm.
It's a good thing you got other people working in the organization. You can send them.
No, like if I have to go to Alaska, I'm like, somebody else can
somebody
go.
Somebody else can
go. Because I don't want
to
look at it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to think about
goodness.
It. So that's a weird thing. There's your weird.
I'm going to have to look that up. I'm going to have to look that up.
That's pretty funny. That is. That
and
is,
I'll have to probably send you
funny.
Something.
No, please don't. Or you can, but I may gag.
That is too funny. Well, thank you very much for carving some time out of your schedule. I know you're exceptionally busy. Really appreciate you coming and talking to us.
Yeah, of course.
Sharing all the great and wonderful things. Abortionworker.com is where everybody needs to go. And maybe it's not something that you need. Maybe it's just something you need to be a support of. But maybe there's somebody that you know that you need to maybe you're the impetus for them to contact Abby and this great organization. And She Was Stronger is the short film on YouTube.
Yeah.
We'll link all this in the show notes. And Terry, thanks for joining me.
It was such a pleasure.
Our surprise guest host.
My friend Abby.
I love it.
God bless you very much.
Thank
and you. We'll see you on the high ground.
Thank you.